This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 40 years after Watergate, President Obama cites executive privilege. Rubio's out, then he's in again. And after baseball phenom Bryce Harper leads off, Harry Reid hits second. It's Wednesday, and time for a...
That's a clown question, bro.
...edition of the Political Junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
Oops.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us to recap the week in politics. Congress heads to the brink on transportation and student loans, a tough week for the attorney general. George Lemieux jumps out of the GOP Senate primary in the Sunshine State. John Kerry will play Romney's part in presidential debate prep. And we'll look ahead to next week when congressional veterans Charlie Rangel and Orrin Hatch face primary fights. In a few minutes, we'll focus on the battle for Latino votes as the president and the Republican candidate head to Orlando to address the National Association of Latino elected officials. Later in the program, The Revisionaries, a new documentary on the ideological struggle over textbooks in Texas. But first, as usual, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us here in Studio 3A. And as usual, we begin with a trivia question. You feeling better, Ken?
Nope. I mean yes. Hi, Neil. Okay, well, the trivia question is, well, the two longest-serving African-American congressmen in history are in danger of losing their seats this year. Charlie Rangel, who's represented Harlem since 1971, has been redistricted and is in trouble, could be in trouble, in next Tuesday's primary. And John Conyers of Detroit, he was first elected in 1964. He could lose his primary in August, and because of population changes, he could lose to a white candidate. Which somehow leads to the trivia question.
Eventually, yes.
Neil, by the way, Neil has fallen asleep during his introduction. Of all the current members of the Congressional Black Caucus, who was the last one who came to the House by beating a white incumbent?
If you think you know the answer to this week's trivia question, of the current members of the Congressional Black Caucus, the last to come to the House by defeating a white incumbent, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Of course, the winner gets a fabulous Political Junkie No Prize T-shirt eventually, in exchange for a promise to take a picture of him or herself wearing it.
Or both.
Or eventually, to post on our wall of shame. So we try to begin with actual votes when we can. No primaries yesterday, but a House committee is set to vote on a contempt citation for Attorney General Eric Holder.
Yes, and of course, the Democrats are saying this is all political, and it may be political, but the Republicans, and this is the House Oversight Committee, led by Daryl Issa of California, and he's been trying to get documents from the Attorney General on the Fast and Furious plan. This was the administration's plan of, I guess, sending guns into Mexico.
And tracking how
and
they go.
Trying to track them, but of course, some of them were using crimes. And today, of course, the House has been threatening contempt citation, contempt of Congress, and they still may vote that. The committee may vote on that today. But this morning, President Obama said, executive privilege, I am not releasing the communications about the decisions that went into these policy decisions.
Did these contempt citations for members of the cabinet, did they ever go anywhere?
Well, sometimes the cabinet members ultimately acquiesce and release the documents. Sometimes, because the president says executive privilege, it just dies right there. But that may not stop the Republican committee from voting today, and it may not even stop the full House, the Republican-led House, from voting. But other than that, as you say, it doesn't go beyond that.
In the meantime, you have Congress hanging fire on two issues which could have real effects on people. The transportation bill, people could be losing their jobs as state cut back on federally funded projects. And the student loans, if they don't act, those loans, the rates on those loans double, I think, at the end of this month.
Right. Both expire June 30th. And both, I mean, the Congress is known for playing the game of chicken to the end. But it seems like on the transportation bill, I mean the highway bill, this is talking about road and mass transit. They're talking about they will get a deal done, and it may be as soon as this week, as early as Friday. Since the last transportation bill expired in 2009, there's been 9 extensions. They keep pushing it over and pushing it off, and it looks like both parties, Speaker John Boehner and Majority Leader Harry Reid, the Senate side, say they will come out with a deal this week. So I think both that and the student loans looks like it's going to happen this week.
And the contempt citation, you'd think that would be bad enough, but it's a terrible week for the attorney general as his aides swing and miss at Roger Clemens.
Well, yeah, and I mean, whatever you think about Roger Clemens, and we said this also about John Edwards, whatever you think about John Edwards, the point is that this was a very expensive and very prolonged investigation trying to convict both John Edwards on campaign finance charges and Roger Clemens about lying to Congress, both of whom, if had they been convicted, would have gone to prison for a maximum of like 30 years. And again, I'm not going to hold any brief for John Edwards' personal behavior, and even though I'm a Yankees fan, but Roger Clemens has never been my favorite, but the point is, going to prison for 30 years lying to Congress, it just seems a little bit much, and it was kind of a black eye for the Justice Department.
In the meantime, there was a report that Marco Rubio, the freshman senator from the state of Florida, who was some considered a possibility for vice presidential choice on the GOP side, that he was ruled out of the running. Well, Mr. Romney quashed that speculation.
The story was entirely false. Marco Rubio is being thoroughly vetted as part of our process.
And so I think he is now.
This is so silly, because what happened was ABC News and the Washington Post reported earlier this week that Marco Rubio wasn't on the short list. He wasn't being vetted. Now, the fact is, especially with the fact that Mitt Romney is speaking to NALEO, the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials, tomorrow in Orlando.
And more about that later.
Yes, and about the importance of the Latino vote. You don't want to rule off somebody, or, you know, cross off somebody before you even got to the list yet. But the problem for this is, if Mitt Romney says, no, Marco Rubio is on the list, what happens about everybody else they ask about? Is he going to have to deny or affirm whether they're still potential VPs?
Well, except for the possibility of Mitch Daniels, who would rather be president of Purdue.
Of Purdue, right. That's what it looks like is going to happen. And it looked like he was not going to be considered for VP anyway.
In the meantime, we have some people on the line who think they know the answer to this week's trivia question.
Which was what?
Which was the last member of the current Congressional Black Caucus to defeat a white incumbent to get to the House
of
Representatives.
Right, now
I remember. It is 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And we'll start with Albert. Albert is with us from Lake Havasu City in Arizona.
Yes, I was going to guess Maxine Waters.
Maxine Waters, if memory serves, she succeeded Melvin Dimerly in California in 1992. So, but anyway, she replaced a retiring African-American incumbent. She didn't beat a white incumbent.
Thanks for the call. Let's see if we go next to, this is Polly. Polly with us from Carolina Beach in North Carolina.
Hi. It's a complete guess, and it's only because he's from Minnesota that I thought maybe it was him. I think he's from Minnesota. Keith Ellison.
Keith Ellison is from Minnesota, but when he was elected, I think it was a white incumbent who retired. I believe it was Martin Sabo, but he didn't defeat an incumbent. He was elected in an open seat where a white retired.
Thanks very much. Appreciate the call, Polly. Let's go next to, this is Leon. Leon with us from Winnsboro, South Carolina.
Is it Representative John Lewis from Georgia?
No, John Lewis, again, when White Fowler, a white incumbent, was elected was elected to the Senate, John Lewis defeated Julian Bond, but it was an open seat when he won it in 1986.
Been there quite a while, though. Thanks very much, and let's go to Tim, and Tim with us from Miami.
Yeah, Neil, it's Congressman Alan West from District 22.
Alan West is correct.
Ding, ding, ding.
Alan West, a Republican elected in 2010, defeated Ron Klein in the general election. Alan West, one of the two black Republicans in the House.
So if I can figure out how to put you on hold, Tim, we will collect your particulars and arrange to send you a future Political Junkie No Prize T-shirt in exchange for your promise of a digital image of yourself wearing it, so we can post that on our wall of shame.
All right, great. Thank you, Neil.
All right.
Neil, don't you want to know that? Aren't you fascinated that I know who everybody succeeded in the House?
No, I know you know that
stuff.
Okay, yeah.
Because I was being fascinated as I was listening to myself.
You usually fascinate yourself.
Yeah.
It's sort of an interesting process.
Yes.
In the meantime, we have some things to look forward to next week. We mentioned that another member of the Congressional Black Caucus, and that's Charlie Rangel, he's been redistricted that old Adam Clayton Powell seat in Harlem, no longer the shape it once was.
Well, it used to, when he beat Adam Clayton Powell in 1970, and Powell was in the House for 26 years, Rangel's been in there for 42 years, but when Charlie Rangel won in 1970, it was 3/4 African-American. Now it's only 1/3 black. Most of it is Puerto Rican and Dominican. And the guy he's running against, his main opponent, it would be, he's a state senator. If elected, he would be the first Dominican-American elected to Congress. Charlie Rangel's in trouble, but again, you can't count him out.
And he, of course, had the citation.
He was censured by the House in 2010, absolutely.
In the meantime, a very different race in Utah.
Yes, it's called the White Race, and that race is Orrin Hatch, who's been in the Senate since, you got to see Neil's face again, since 1976. He has been accused by Tea Party conservatives of being insufficiently conservative, but he's kind of moved to the right the last couple of years. He's facing a guy named Dan Lilienquist in next Tuesday's primary, but most Republicans seem to think that that unlike Dick Lugar, who didn't learn the lesson, Orrin Hatch did, and he will be renominated, but it's something to watch.
And before we leave New York entirely, there's another congressional race out there, Ed Towns.
Ed Towns is retiring, also a member of the Black Caucus, but there is a primary between two African Americans, one of whom has expressed support for Muammar Gaddafi. He's been accused of being anti-Semitic. It's kind of a tough race in Brooklyn. It's the kind of thing that Brooklyn politics is not unused to.
Also, primaries next week in Oklahoma and in Colorado. And as it happens, we will be in Colorado next week at the Aspen Ideas Festival. And Vin Weber and Anna Greenberg will be joining us as we start duking it out.
I could use two aspens right now.
Oh, that's very good, Ken. Yeah, very good. In the meantime, there was an interesting incident at last Friday in the Rose Garden as President Obama was trying to make his announcement on immigration and the reforms that we're going to be talking about a little bit in the next segment. A reporter for the Daily Call interrupted him. Very bad form.
Well, it's a very unusual. Neil Monroe, who's a columnist or who works for the Daily Caller, that's the conservative website run by Tucker Carlson. Monroe said that he thought President Obama was finishing his statement and shouted out a question, but of course, the president was not finishing his statement, and the president was not too pleased.
Stay with us. We're going to be focusing on the Latino vote, which was in many ways the subject of that presidential news conference in the Rose Garden on Friday. Mitt Romney and President Obama want support from Latinos. So what would get your vote, Latinos, if you're listening? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan. Ken Rudin's back, our political junkie. He joins us most Wednesday. And Ken, you were away last week, so two Scuttlebutton winners?
Right, and two T-shirts that we don't have, we will be sending out. But the two weeks ago, the Scuttlebutton answer was Hogan's Heroes, and the correct the winner was Patrick Hirigoyen.
He tunneled his way out.
Yeah. He did, indeed. Patrick Hirigoyen of St. Paul, Minnesota. And the following week was Snow White and the Huntsman. Guess what button I used for Huntsman? And the winner there was Luigi D. Guzman of Fairfax, Virginia.
And another T-shirt to give out, and this one is to an emailer who also got Alan West at the same time we got our call. So two winners this week. So this is Chris Kenny from Tampa, Florida. We'll be getting a T-shirt eventually. The latest Scuttlebutton puzzle, and of course, Ken's Political Junkie
column.
It's a
good puzzle this week.
Is it?
Yes,
okay,
it is.
That's unusual. Yeah. Both online at npr.org/junkie. President Obama launched the latest salvo in the political battle for the hearts and minds of Latino voters Friday, as we mentioned, with his decision to allow some undocumented immigrants to avoid deportation, a move some called an overstep of presidential authority. To others, it didn't go nearly far enough. House Speaker John Boehner expressed concern over the move and complained it makes even more difficult to get to a permanent solution.
Well, I think the president's announcement on immigration it puts everyone in a difficult position.
And other Republicans blasted the president for what they called a transparent bid for Latino votes. That battle was well underway when the president gaining the endorsement of popular Univision talk show host Cristina Saralegui.
Pero que estés listo para los próximos 5 meses, porque la comunidad latina tiene un papel importantísimo en asegurar la reelección del presidente Obama en noviembre.
And that part of one of a series of Spanish language ads released by the Obama campaign this week. We want to hear from Latino voters in this segment. What would get your vote? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. We're joined here in Studio 3A by Rui Teixeira, senior fellow at the Century Foundation and the Center for American Progress. Nice to have you back on the program.
Good to be here.
And joining us by smartphone, Mario Lopez, president of the Hispanic Leadership Fund, an advocacy organization that promotes limited government, individual liberty, and free enterprise. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you for having me on.
And Rui, let's begin with you. What did the immigration initiative announcement do for the president?
Well, I think it's pretty clear what it did for the president. He's been running quite far ahead among Hispanic voters relative to Romney. Obama won these voters by 36 points in 2008. He's running, 36, 40, 45 points ahead among typical polls. But the worry has always been, will these voters show up? That's really the issue. There seemed to be a relative lack of enthusiasm for putting that leaning into action by actually showing up in November. That's what they were worried about. This mini DREAM Act, I think, is designed exactly to arouse that kind of enthusiasm among Hispanic voters so they do show up.
And Mario, the president was in trouble with at least some Latino leaders for not going far enough on immigration reform, as he promised to do during his election campaign in 2008.
Well, I think that's right. And I think that, the point was brought up about a lack of enthusiasm among Hispanic voters. And I think that there are a few points to be made for that lack of enthusiasm. I mean, he broke his promise to address immigration reform in the first year of his presidency. We have 11% Hispanic unemployment, which is much higher. It's, over 2 points higher than that for the general population. His administration has a record number of deportations, now 1.2 million and counting. So there are a variety of reasons why there's been a lack of enthusiasm among Hispanics for the president.
In the meantime, Rui Teixeira, Mitt Romney, the GOP candidate, is yet really to address this immigration initiative.
Yes, he's yet to say much about it. He much prefers the message, the economy is bad, I will fix it. Obama, doesn't know how to fix it. That's the Romney plan. And talking about anything else is much less comfortable for him. And he's going to be very uncomfortable dealing with this initiative on the part of the president in terms of this mini DREAM Act. He doesn't really have a comfortable thing to do. He can't really move toward endorsing it. He can't really say anything very dramatic on immigration reform because his base would kill him. So really, in a sense, what Obama has done is outmaneuver him. This is a move that is actually popular with the public as a whole. A Bloomberg poll just came out that said 64% support the move by the president versus just 38% opposed, including 2-1 among independent voters. Among Latino voters, of course, it's overwhelming, and they say by 49% to 15%, it's going to make them more enthusiastic about voting for Obama this November. So that, really puts Romney in an uncomfortable position. What does he do?
And Mario Lopez, he's further entrapped by his own positions during the primary campaign when he said he really ran to the right of people like Rick Perry on the immigration issue.
Yes, we were there sounding the alarm a long time ago and trying to make sure that all the candidates in the primary understood what the pitfalls are when dealing with this issue. Unfortunately, at that time, Mitt Romney chose to take another direction. And now
we're having a little trouble with our smartphone technology. We'll get Mario Lopez back on the phone in just a minute. Ken?
Well, I was going to say that, if you listen to the segment, the beginning of the segment, the soundbite we heard from John Boehner, Speaker of the House, he said that he puts us, a lot of us, in a difficult position, and none more so than Mitt Romney, because of anybody, he's been accused over and over again of flip-flopping. And so how does he, if he knows that the way to win states like Florida, Nevada, Colorado, states like that, is to make increases in the Latino vote, how do you do that given the rhetoric you heard during the primary debate? And I was going to ask Mario if we can get it back, how he can do that without having to look like that flip-flopper that you heard so many Republicans accuse him of during the debates.
And we should have him back up shortly. In the meantime, let's go to a caller. This is Nicholas. Nicholas with us from West Palm Beach.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, sir. Yes. I'm going to pretty much say what I think is the main issue in the Latino viewpoint of voting this election, and it is that we didn't, as a voter group, immigrate from another place to give our children second class citizenship. We are making a sacrifice, whatever. Yes, it's true. It's going to be tough, but for our kids, we want the rights that are allowed for everyone else. And I am voting against Romney to avoid that.
Okay. Thanks very much for the call, Nicholas. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Mario Lopez is back on the line. We apologize for our technical problems. And the question Ken wanted to ask, Mario, well, Ken, why don't you ask it again?
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, given the fact that he has been accused, Mitt Romney has been accused of flip-flopping through, you know, on so many social issues, he knows that to win states like Nevada, Colorado, New Mexico, he has to appeal and make inroads into the Hispanic vote. How do you do that, given all the rhetoric we heard during the debates?
Well, I think that it was pointed out before correctly that I think he's going to try to focus as much as he can on jobs and the economy. And I think rightly so. But as I said before, he is finding out on some of the pitfalls of these issues. I mean, the facts are that this is dealing with kids, young people who have not broken the law of their own volition. And so it's completely... I think justified to say, you know, look, you know, we don't punish kids for the transgressions of their parents, especially not kids who have earned their way into college or who are trying to go defend America by being in the military, etc. So I think that he is in a bit of a bind, but so far he's taken the right tact, which was the Marco Rubio, echoing the Marco Rubio sentiments, and which I think are accurate in the sense that this does make finding a long-term solution a lot harder. But, you know, that's not something that we've seen that's been high on President Obama's priority list. What he cares first and foremost about is politics.
Mario, I noticed one thing that the Republicans did not go out of their way of saying this week or last week was the A word, amnesty. You heard it from some, but you didn't hear from most. Is that a good sign?
I think so. I mean, I think that, you know, whether it's because of the political realities or you know, whether it's because of something else, but I think that it's accurate. I mean, I think that one of the things that a lot of independent voters out there are hearing is every time something is proposed on immigration, it's just everything's amnesty. And I think that that's not exactly intellectually honest to say that, you know, no matter what it is that you propose, anything to streamline the legal immigration process is amnesty. That's clearly not the case. And so we've been encouraged to that, you know, it's sort of the measured responses so far.
Let's get Francisco on the line. Francisco calling from Miami.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I will fall in the category of Hispanic voter, and I just want to comment that as a voter, I feel that Obama, President Obama, is definitely pandering to us. But, you know, that being said, you know, with a dysfunctional Congress and no meaningful solutions coming from Congress, I have to support him in what he does. Right now, we're in a situation where I think Obama's executive order has and will open a lot of doors to a lot of immigrants who would otherwise not have any opportunity to advance in this country. And talking from personal experience, I think that executive order is going to, you know, open a lot of doors for a lot of people.
Francisco, do you consider yourself a Republican or a Democrat?
I'm actually a registered Republican, but, you know, I vote on issues, not not upon party line.
Okay, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it.
Sure.
And Rui Teixeira, Ken named a number of states, I think New Mexico, Colorado, Nevada, where the Latino vote will be critical. It could be elsewhere, too. Arizona, maybe, at the outside. Florida.
Right. Well, let's run down those lists of states. New Mexico, obviously the Hispanic vote is huge. It's literally 42% of eligible voters there. On the other hand, New Mexico is probably not on high on the list of competitive states. I think Obama's highly likely to carry it. But then when you start getting into Nevada and Colorado and Florida, obviously these are, you know, all very competitive states. In Nevada and Colorado, you have a very rapidly increasing Hispanic population. According to the latest data, census data I've been looking at, it's been increasing at the level of 1 percentage point a year. So there could be 4 points more eligible voters in the voter pool in both Nevada and Colorado this coming election than were last election. That's huge. So, you know, Hispanics loom very large there. They loom very large in Florida. As we know, they're about 18% of eligible voters. And then if you look at Arizona, that's 24% of the voters there, eligible voters there, are Hispanics. And, you know, there is the place in the United States where Hispanics have been increasing the fastest, 5 points more eligible voters this election than the previous election. So, you know, it's not an easy lift for Obama, but it's not out of reach either.
And in Florida, we think of the Cuban community in Florida, yet they are a smaller percentage of the Latino vote than previously.
That's right. Every year it gets less. If you look at the growth in the Latino population in Florida, it's entirely from non-Cuban Latinos. So as time goes by, the stereotype of a conservative Florida Hispanic voter becomes less and less applicable.
That is Rui Teixeira, who is with us from the Century Foundation and the Center for American Progress. Also with us, Mario Lopez, president of the Hispanic Leadership Fund, an advocacy organization that promotes limited government, individual liberty, and free enterprise. Of course, political junkie Ken Rudin is with us as well. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Ken?
Well, let me ask you a question. You have established, and we have established, the fact that what President Obama's change of heart policy on deportations is very popular. Is it cynical to say that this speech he made came a week before the Naleo conference, where tomorrow Mitt Romney speaks to the group and President Obama speaks to them on Friday, and this comes, of course, after record deportations by the same administration?
Yeah, I mean, the exact timing of it, I can't really speak to. I mean, that might be a factor, but I assure you, they were, as you, I'm sure you believe and know, it's been a huge worry on their part that the deportations record of the Obama administration would be something that would sort of cut the ground out a little bit from the enthusiasm of the Hispanic vote, even though they are leaning so far in his direction. So he wanted to make a dramatic gesture that would show them that that's really not where he's coming from, that he really believes in the DREAM Act, he really believes in trying to move forward on immigration reform, and that he is, in fact, on their side. And, you know, well, guess what? The other guy is not, because the same poll I alluded to, where it turned out Latinos were, like, you know, markedly more enthusiastic about Obama now because of this move. They actually asked them about, well, what about Romney's position in immigration, self-deportation, you know, Arizona's a model. What does that make you feel about Romney? And so 59% said that made them, Latino voters said it made them less enthusiastic about voting for Obama. So, you know, raising the profile
for Romney,
of this, for Romney, excuse me. So, yeah, I think they know very well what they're doing here. And I think it's likely to prove pretty successful.
And Mario Lopez, let me turn to you. Given those figures for the growth of the Latino vote cited by Rui Teixeira, that was in several states, to a lesser degree going on in other states as well. How does the Republican Party, as a party, we saw what happened in the last presidential primary as each candidate tried to outflank the other on the right on the immigration issue. How does the Republican Party start to turn around and appeal to that community?
Well, I think the most important thing is sincerity. And you know, I think that applies to Republicans as well as to Democrats. I mean, we were talking about the cynicism just a second ago, and I think it's entirely appropriate to look at this move by President Obama with a cynical eye. I mean, just 1 year ago, he was saying that, you know, I really can't do this single-handedly. You know, it's not in my authority. I need Congress to act. And now he does exactly the same thing that he said he didn't have the authority to do. So either he was lying then or he's lying now. And either one, in my view, is unacceptable. The fact is that you know, as a senator, I mean, going back to his days in the U.S. Senate, he voted for 5 different poison pill amendments to kill comprehensive immigration reform bill, the same bill that Republicans were criticized for not supporting. So, I mean, I think that his playing games with the immigration issue and his using Latinos as political pawns, unfortunately, he has a long history of doing that. And so what Republicans need to do is they need to not just point that out, but they need to step forward with positive solutions and really explain to Latino voters and to all voters why policies that are rooted in free enterprise and limited government are better and will ensure more prosperity and greater job creation and so forth.
Let's see if we can squeeze one last caller in. And this is Hob. Hob with us from Orange County in California.
Hi, thank you for letting me voice my opinion. You know, this discourages me as a Hispanic Latino voter. The reason is, you know, they keep pulling us all Latinos, all Hispanics in the same pool, like all of our parents came to this country illegally. You know, my parents went through the hardship of doing it the right way. I myself have served in the military, have fought for this country. And I feel that it's not right to do this because it creates more division for the other ethnicities and races within the country that are here. And the reason be it, we all have to compete for the same slots at school. We all have to compete for the same scholarships.
I don't mean to cut you off, Hob, but we just have a few seconds left.
Well, I just want to say, you know, that this actually discourages me, but I'm not going to vote for Romney because it's well known that Mormonism, they believe that people are dark-skinned because God punished us. And
They changed that policy a few years ago, but thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it. Our thanks also to Rui Teixeira and Mario Lopez. Also, your thanks to you, too. And Ken Rudin, we'll see you next week in Aspen, Colorado at the Aspen Ideas Festival. We'll look forward to that.
Buenos Aires.
Yeah. Up next, The Revisionaries, a documentary film that focuses on the Texas textbook controversy and the teaching of evolution. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's The Talk of the Nation from NPR News.